It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, where all deposits are insured. My name is Joey. This is number 290. I'm here with my co-host, Len. Buddy, how you doing over there?
I'm good, because I know that my deposits are also insured. And, you know, when I go to the bank, my hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in there, it's all going to be accessible. I know that I'm not going to get rug pulled. I'm going to get access to it. And then I'm going to buy a lot of tacos and cervezas with all that. So, yeah, I'm good over here. How about you, Joey?
Outstanding, man. I'm recovering here from a cold. You can probably still hear it in my voice. I'll apologize in advance if you hear me, you know, sucking back snot or blowing my nose during the show. I'll try my best to mute myself, of course. But anyway, Len, lots to talk about in security, privacy, all these things. Let's start, as always, with the quote of the week from last week. The bureaucracy is expanding to meet the needs of the expanding bureaucracy. That was Oscar Wilde. So congrats to Henry for that one. This week's quote, Len, see if you know it. Mankind, it seems, makes a poorer performance of government than almost any other human activity. Common thread there between last week and this week, eh? A little bit of a you know, same vein type feeling there. You got any guesses? Are we allowed to guess?
No, I'm not. I want to guess. I'll say it after the show because I don't want to sway anybody's opinion. And the first person to post the correct answer gets the next domain or hosting renewal on EasyDNS. So there's a lot riding on this. But don't search. Don't use Google. Don't use Bing. Don't use AI. Use only what's in your head to answer this question. You get it right? Great. If not, there's going to be another one next week.
I think we have an AI story to lead off here if you want to get into it.
It's kind of why.
Let me get my tiny violin out to play while you read this story.
Microsoft, and they have an AI ethics department that has since been disbanded, and it's called the Ethics and Society team. And that entire team, unfortunately for them, have been let go. And this Ethics and Society team, this group was tasked with ensuring that product design reflect the company's principles pertaining to artificial intelligence development. And I'm wondering if this team was let go at the recommendation of ChatGPT. Maybe they were given the instruction. I don't know. But of note, Microsoft's been pumping a lot of money into the AI sphere. In fact, they put about $11 billion in OpenAI. And the AI software, which it is, if you look at it, it's a big thing for Microsoft moving forward. It's included now in their Bing search engine. It's getting a lot of attention for people that are looking into this stuff. And it's giving some rather cool reviews. I haven't yet tried it out, but it seems to be rather cool from what I understand. But not only them, Microsoft isn't the only ones looking at or going along with onto AI. Google and Meta is another two. They're in a mix to see who gets Skynet operational first. So good luck to all three of those trio. The ENS team, which I talked about, that was let go. Keep in mind, Microsoft's been laying off a heck of a lot of people. This is as a result of the economy grinding to a halt. So they just deemed this team to be non-essential or maybe not able to provide enough profits for them, and they were fortunately let go. But employees say that the ENS team played a critical role in ensuring the company's responsible AI principles that would be reflected in the design of the products that ship. And AI, it's looking at, you know, I could just give some comments here. I think it's going to be great for society in one respect, but a huge hindrance in others. So it's going to help with a lot of mundane tasks, but who knows how far this goes. But with respect to this ethics and principles, I mean, what ideas are being implemented here? Whose agenda is being pushed? And if so, if you want to challenge it, who do you challenge it to? Because, you know, there's going to be some oversight with this team, and hopefully that the team itself would have a neutral standpoint. But even neutrality is something of a contentious issue, because one person's neutrality is another person's extreme. So I don't know. I don't know what to think of this. It's just more just news for me. I don't have much commentary aside from that. I want to hear your thoughts, Joey.
I think that every sort of ethics and, you know, similar, I'm very carefully choosing my words here, you know, these sort of similar luxury committees and groups in giant corporations, probably the product of zero interest rates, honestly. They're sort of ZERP children. And, you know, the thing you mentioned there at the end about whose priorities and whose ethic are we baking into these AI tools? It's a great question. In the 4 or 5 weeks we've done this show, we've talked quite a bit about the number of times that information was censored, not because it was wrong or because it was dangerous, but because it wasn't on narrative or on brand for the powers that be. And AI, as we've seen in ChatGPT, and as I'm sure we'll see in other iterations of these chatbots and other AI tools, they're responding in a way that mirrors what the people who create and maintain the software products believe. And there's many, many different ways that companies try and tell you that that's not the case. But in every single instance, over a long enough time horizon, they are found out, exposed, and called fraudulent, rightfully so. So I personally don't care much about this ethics team being laid off. I would prefer that as time goes on, you know, and this is something near and dear to you. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this, actually. As time goes on and these products become more accessible to the lay person or to the lay coder or to the non-institutional, you know, employee type guy or gal, I would like to see these take on a different, you know, a different tone, something that's a little more free and open. And I suspect that'll happen much like it has in other software over the years. Do you have a view on that? Is that something that you're thinking about? Like, do you know sort of what the steps along the way might be for something like ChatGPT to become, you know, forked or no?
I'm not sure. I haven't followed it.
It's obviously not open source software, so I don't want people to think it's open source. It's obviously not. But there's probably a lot of people interested in doing this stuff. You mentioned a few of those names. NVIDIA and Oracle also working in AI quite a bit. On the Oracle call the other day, actually, there was a lot of talk about AI. So interesting stuff, man. It's not a concern for me that these teams are getting rid of their AI and ethics people, because I know in the past what the results of those, you know, teams working on different projects has been. I expect it would have been the same.
Yeah, a lot of this is proprietary and they're not going to share it with their competitors for obvious reasons, and they're going to try to keep that whatever they have close to their vest. But with that being said, then it raises the question how or who's programming it, into what direction. And the fact that it has access to the whole internet is, I guess, it's a good thing, but you could kind of skew it in such a way that it's close to certain sections of the
internet. It's been skewed. There's an entire population out there on Reddit who thinks the internet is dead. And it's hard to argue with that. You know, when you compare the internet of 2010 to the internet of today, you can't find any of the stuff you ever want to find if it's like a counter narrative. And that's even too strong a term, because there is some stuff out there that really shouldn't even fall into that category, but does somehow. Embarrassing videos of politicians or whatever. You can't find them on Google, on Bing. Even on stuff like the Brave browser, which has its own search engine as well, it's hard to find some of that stuff because it just gets wiped. And so, yeah, to your point, I think there's been a clear slant in internet and information availability, and it'll, you know, hopefully not continue, but it would under terms like you know, having an AI ethics committee. I think that's pretty clear. There's a lot of evidence for that.
All right, let's move on. It looks like there's an FBI analyst that may have, just encroached in some Congress members' privacy here. And this is with respect to something called Section 702. A declassified report released this past December showed that the FBI may have overstepped their boundaries. And this analysis may have violated rules by doing excessive searches into a member of Congress in 2019 or 2020. And the name of the congressperson was not disclosed in the report, but it was learned later that it may be Illinois Republican Representative Darren LaHood, as he identified himself as the person impacted by the searches. So I'm going to take this with a grain of salt. It may be him, but until we know for certain, I'm not exactly sure. But this brings up something that, you know, the warrantless surveillance law known as Section 702. And Section 702, well, it gives the government free rein to collect info collected by companies like Google or Apple, including their private messages. And the law, the Section 702 law, expires this year, if not reauthorized. And seems to be some sort of rallying effect where they want to have this authorized once again and established further. The law was first set in place in 2008, so it's been in law for quite some time. And regardless if you like this type of surveillance or not, it is here to stay and likely will probably get even more invasive moving forward. if, you know, if they're spying on you, spying on somebody like this representative, Darren LaHood, and they're spying on one of their own, what chances do we have as individuals to protect ourselves from overreach, or what some would say potential abuse of authority? And if you think that you're outside the U.S. and you're protected, well, think again, because Section 702 gives the government the ability to collect information on non-U.S. residents who are located abroad. Incredible stuff. So do yourself a favor after hearing this. Learn privacy practices, Tor VPN, ditch the spyware phone, ditch the closed source computer that you have. None of this shit respects your freedom. Find something that does. Learn the best way to custody your own data. Edward Snowden, you know, he opened up a can of worms. He was instrumental in lifting the veil on privacy. The government is spying on a lot of people. So the onus is on you. And if you fail in this task, you have nobody else to blame but yourself. And almost lends me to believe, Joey, sovereign individual talk. What do you think?
I love that book. I've been reading it again, as you know. I won't bring that up in here. What I will say is that I think there's been an appetite shift in the normie crowd. I don't know if that's a term that we've used on Access of Easy yet, but in the normie crowd, the sort of layperson crowd, in the desire for privacy in messaging. And I've enjoyed seeing it. My family, who's made up of, you know, my wife, my brother, few of my uncles and aunts, and, you know, my dad and his brothers and whatever, we have a group chat that's encrypted. And, you know, 10 years ago, Len, if I had tried to move, or even 5 years ago, if I had tried to move a group chat to an encrypted service, would have been an uphill battle. And, you know, that's probably the most difficult chat I have. Every other chat that you and me are in together, that I'm in with my other friends together, that we talk to other Bitcoiners in, they're all encrypted. Every single one is on an encrypted private service. And I think when you look at stories like this about the government, whether it's United States, Canada, one of the European countries, doesn't matter, the government being able to basically extract data at a whim from the major corporations that control that data, be it phone carriers, phone manufacturers, or otherwise, I just wonder, like, what is this sort of watershed moment for the people who are not using these things? Text messaging, for example, is almost like unbelievable. Yeah, you're giving the thumbs down for people on audio. It's almost unbelievably open. Like, everyone can look at that stuff. It's a relic of a bygone era. I think it was something that was popular before it was so widely known that governments could just pick off whatever you're sending, data, pictures, whatever. It doesn't matter. And now I just wonder, you know, with the appetite shift that I mentioned earlier, stories like this becoming more frequent, and just the general sharing of information from one generation to the next, now starting to move the other way, right? It used to be obviously older people passing information down to their younger ones. But now I look at the way my brother and I carry on with our family, and we're passing information up the chain now. It's pretty easy to make this case to somebody who doesn't want their privacy taken, because if boomers hate one thing, it's people spying on them, right? These are the same people who will say the kids are taking too many pictures and put your damn phone away and all that stuff. It's easy to make this case with a lot of them. So I am, you know, sour about the story and about the law and the use, obviously. But it's a positive if you're looking to make this change in your own life and in the lives of people you care about. So take advantage of this. It's an opportunity.
100%. Well, we have now a senator, Kelly, and looks like that they want to add, he wants to add some additional things that could be censored on social media. And this comes from a New York Post from Jonathan Turley. He used a writer. He written a piece that is basically shining a light on social media censorship that the Democrats may want to employ. So this Arizona Senator Mark Kelly is calling for the censorship of bank critics, as this may be too dangerous for social media. And so showing images of people posing in Ukraine wearing fatigues is fine, but talking about a bank run in the United States, which has happened in some banks, is not kosher. Give me a break. And Senator Kelly has asked from the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, and the FDIC to censor social media posts that talk that may raise concerns following Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank sagas. Now, is this the new mandate for the Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, and the FDIC? Are they responsible to monitor and censor social media posts? I think this goes beyond the mandates they've been given, but I could be wrong.
I thought it was just a dual mandate, right? It was, full employment and price sustainability, and maybe also
throw in censor me.
I think the Treasury's got a third mandate, which is making sure that whoever's in charge has a terrible haircut. And so this is the fourth,
They met that one. So what is the rationale for stopping these posts? Is it to potentially stop a bank run? You know, screw being informed about banks not having enough cash in hand to pay customers when they choose to withdraw their money. But seeing images of kids being forced to watch a drag show, that's acceptable, according to these people on social media. There are not what they claim to be foreign actors that is going to undermine U.S. banks. They're saying that, unfortunately, foreign actors are going to be pumping this information and trying to undermine U.S. banks. The banks themselves, they're insolvent. They did this to themselves with no fractional reserve. This is a homegrown created ticking time bomb. It's not something that's created abroad. And add this is another topic that lawmakers wanted to censor, including other topics like climate change, gender identity, COVID-19, and the U.S. federal election. So after reading about this, and they want to censor it, really, how safe do you feel about your deposits in a bank? I don't know. For me, I'm questioning it. If I have anything left in there, I'm not going to say if I do.
What are the fire alarms for the U.S. banking system, right? Like, what would cause a run? Gold hitting like 2,500, like a $500 candle, daily candle on gold would be a fire alarm. Gold, by the way, passed 2,000 U.S. today per ounce. So that'd be one fire alarm. Another fire alarm, like we saw in the recent weeks here, is the bank trying to raise capital because no one wants to buy their distressed bond portfolio to meet depositor withdrawal obligations. So that's the second fire alarm. I think another fire alarm, Len, would be banning criticism of banks on social media. Would it not? These people are ridiculous. I want to add one thing here because it's a topic near and dear to you and me. We Bitcoin, we have the other show. And one of the things that Bitcoin and specifically Bitcoin Twitter have done so well for a lot of people is kind of pull the veil, right? You can see the man behind the curtain. At the levers there, even though he's telling you he's doing something, what you're actually experiencing is something else. And in this regard, I think about what it would mean if we censored social media as far as bank criticisms, and would it prevent bank runs? Len, it would prevent people like you and me from knowing there was a problem, but it wouldn't prevent people who are close to the spigot from knowing there's a problem. It wouldn't prevent politicians from knowing there's a problem. It wouldn't prevent hedge fund managers or the extremely wealthy from knowing there was a problem. We are always the last to know. The average citizen, the pleb, as we call it in Bitcoin land, always the last to know. And the sort of disconnect here between what this gentleman thinks is the intended consequence, well, it would protect the banking system, and what the actual consequence is, well, it would actually just put people who really need to know whether or not their deposits are safe in the dark, is akin to every other second order effect the politicians have missed while they've acted on something on a whim, or because their constituents are upset, or because there's a spy balloon in the sky, or whatever. Okay. We just saw this as if there wasn't a recent example of someone saying something stupid and not thinking about second order effects. We just saw this with Yellen like 4 days ago or something. She gets on TV and gets roasted. Okay. Like a Fortino's whole chicken up there talking about, well, we're going to try and make sure that the systemically important banks are protected. Okay. Well, what about the other ones, Janet? Like, she may as well have said, what other ones? But these guys, it's not like there wasn't an example of this just happening. This guy knows, man. He knows that there will be second order effects. He just doesn't stop to consider them. And of course, that's something stupid. And so, I would also note that without Twitter, a story like this may not make it to you and me and to the people who listen to and watch this program. That's not good. We need to know that stuff. We expect the government to be transparent. And since they're not, more often than not, Twitter is an important tool for us, and people can parse their own information. As you mentioned, almost every instance of censorship over the last 3 years has been proven incorrect over a long enough time horizon. This one would be the same. So two thumbs down to this fella for sure.
It reminds me back in the day when they had Smash Mouth football, the misdirection play. That's the way I'm looking at this.
Little counter, little end around, double reverse.
That's more modern. Okay, we could talk about a cyber crime forum called Breach Forums. Their administrator was arrested in New York. Breach Forums is apparently a well-known cybercrime forum where some of the world's largest hack databases are sold. Now, I'll be perfectly honest, I never heard about this. Well-known maybe to the cybercrime folks, but not to me because I don't delve in that. But anyways, Breach Forums is supposedly to have spawned after Raid Forums. That was a similar forum that was given the shaft after authorities closed down that site in 2022. And the alleged administrator of Breach Forums, Brian Fitzpatrick, aka Pom Pom Purin, was arrested on March 15th in Peekskill, New York. Clearly, he didn't have Peekskill that day because he was nabbed. Buddy was behind sending fake emails through an FBI portal by using an exploit, and charges of conspiracy to commit access device fraud may stick, as you know, it isn't claimed that, so he's claiming that he did send these emails. He's not claiming that this is wrongdoing. Oh, sorry, that he's innocent. He's saying that he's indeed guilty of this. At least that's what's being reported. So I don't know. This is not looking good for him. And they stole the data from the DC Health Link. That's a health insurance exchange in Washington, DC. This story we talked about last week in Access of Easy number 289. Check it out if you already haven't done so. And the sales thread on the forum, Breach Forums, claimed that 170,000 people's names, social security numbers, dates of birth, and health plan information was compromised. And although Breach Forums did stay open for a little bit of time after he was arrested, it was then shut down. So I think, given what he's saying here, given what's being stated here, Brian Fitzpatrick is probably going to go away for a long time. And be made an example of, but given what in fact he did, who he did it to, and the fact he doesn't seem to be claiming that he's innocent with respect to doing the fraud email. So, let's see if there's going to be another forum that's going to spawn as a result of this coming down. It may happen. So from Raid,
how many more dumb names for forums can they come up with, Len? They got Raid Forum, Breach Forum. What's the next one going to be called? Hack the FBI Forum? Like, what is with these names? Why are you inviting this attention? What is going on here? What, I don't understand this. This is brazen. This is like broad daylight. This guy looks like he lives in a meth house. They're dragging stuff out of his house in the photo in the story. Explain to me why, after you successfully managed to run two forums for, you know, extracurriculars, we'll call them. Okay, we don't want to get demonetized. Extracurriculars. Okay. You know, if you're looking up these forums for extracurriculars, you could pick a different name. Okay, for sure. That's number one. Number two, Len, is there no lower hanging fruit than the feds? Like, you got to go to the FBI mail server. This is where you're going to hang your hat. You're not going to be able to complete your mission, okay? There's not going to be a magnum opus if the FBI decides, oh yeah, wait a minute, there was a software misconfiguration here, which is the tale they're telling. And they nab the guy. You're right. That guy's gone now. He's not going to be, you know, playing League of Legends. He doesn't have SBF's lawyer, for sure. I'll tell you that, okay? There's not going to be any cell phone access, computer access, gaming, VPN, none of that. It's done. It's finished. So the other thing I would suggest to people, again, you and me don't delve into this. It's funny. I had a buddy over last weekend for 2 weekends ago for a couple hours, and he was talking about the dark web. And my wife comes over to the kitchen table where we are, and she's like, how do you even get on the dark web? And it occurred to me that I don't actually, you know, I've never actually said it out loud, but I'm pretty sure you just use a Tor browser to get on the dark web. This guy knew how to do it. But, like, you know, for guys like us, it's a difficult exercise. And so the thing I would just say to people, if you want to experiment with these kinds of things, there's ways to do it probably where you don't wind up on a forum called Breach Forum, Raid Forum, and affiliated with a guy who busted into the FBI mail server. These are all ways to make sure that every time you fly, you're going to have a hard time. These are all ways to make sure that every time you cross a border, go through a toll bridge, police are on the shoulder, you're going to have a hard time. Don't do this. This is a bad idea. There's other ways to have fun, okay? Len plays tennis. You know, I play football, you can lift weights, have a kid, whatever. There's a lot of ways to have fun. This has got to be low on that list, man, for sure.
So perfectly legitimate forearm, I guess, is not the best name to choose next time. I'm assuming.
I don't know what name would you pick? You'd have to pick something in the middle. There's like a Goldilocks zone. It can't be we never do anything wrong for him, but it also can't be break down the FBI's door for him. There's a Goldilocks zone in there somewhere. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, I can't think of one off this.
Maybe you'd call it. Would you call it Access of Easy? I don't know.
I'm not going to go there. Digital surveillance looks like it's on the rise in a Australian workplace. And it's a bank, an Australian bank known as the Commonwealth Bank. They're accused of monitoring their employees through an app called Navigate. And almost every Australian company uses monitoring software on its computers and phones, from what this report says. And the number is estimated to be as high as 90%. Compared to the global average of 80%, according to Herbert Smith Freehills. Now, 90% to 80%, that's massive. But you know what? Considering the fact that a lot of people are hanging on to spyware phones and computers, and you know, this seems to be in line with the numbers that I could perceive to be reality. And the Navigate software was tracking keyboard usage, typing, mouse movements, and location. And it was also measuring the productivity and efficiency of their employees. And I'm wondering about it was probably also monitoring how many times they went to the washroom, given the fact how much information is trying to you know, farm from people. But I guess this information is off limits, or probably not, because it looks like that people were heavily monitored. And eventually, some people were even receiving emails after leaving their desk for a short period of time. So I guess every time they did go to the washroom, yes, they did receive emails. So the problem is that employees were not notified beforehand that they were being spied on. But let's be perfectly honest here. If your company is giving you electronic devices, phone, computer, you name it, darn well it's going to have something on there that's going to monitor you. And it's not to say that it's acceptable, but it's just, it's probably going to be the norm. So the fact that this is happening, it shouldn't sideswipe people. It's like, this could have happened. It happens. Even the phone that you have in your hands right now, 95% of you, 99% of you, it's spyware stuff. A phone or a computer from your employer, expect it to have this. Now, the fact that this is being reported, it's too sad that these people are now getting the information and it's, you know, they're getting sideswiped as a result of all this, but this is the reality of the world we live in. Everybody is being surveilled to the nth degree. This is not uncommon from what I understand.
It's not that hard to figure out. Like even corporate software like Microsoft Teams takes advantage, and everyone can see this, by the way. This is not just like a, you know, manager tool, supervisory tool, surveillance tool. If you go to send somebody an email in Teams and you wait enough time after you punch their address into the two bar, you can actually see whether or not they're at their computer and how long they've been away from their computer for. It'll tell you how long they've been away from their keyboard for. So I just, you know, there's a line somewhere there as far as ethic, like you mentioned. There's a line somewhere there as far as expectation, like you mentioned. You know, did you tell people? I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, you know, a device that doesn't belong to you can have all sorts of software on it. And I'm sure that somewhere in your employment agreement, especially if you work in the financial sector where privacy and secrecy are pretty key parts of the job, parts of the institution, you probably signed something that said, hey, you know, we might check on you from time to time. Now, my question, Len, is did they give you one of those little token webcam block sliders on the laptop? I wonder if they did or not.
Well, I would suggest people just wear masks all the time. And
mask and glasses, maybe
you're protected and you have a legitimate excuse to say that you want to be protected from everything else too. That's so good. Last story.
One other thing on that, like you mentioned, you should also, we should drill this point home. Your phone has all that same information, all of it. So if you don't like this, maybe consider what you're bringing around in your pocket all the time. Convenience and privacy don't jive, as Len will tell you. And you're giving up one for the other basically every minute of every day.
It's always listening. That's the reality. Yeah. But anyways, Virality Project. So researchers at Stanford University, in partnership with several nonprofits, have received government funding. This is interesting. They worked with social media platforms to flag and suppress commentary on COVID vaccines, science, and policy that contradicted public health official stances, even when the commentary was true.
I love
this. This is something that is obviously very concerning. You have this overreach where they're trying to change the narrative, even though there's enough facts to show that, what it is they're trying to hide is not is is just false. So it just more there's nothing I really have to say about this. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. There's nothing else I could really just add to this. I think everybody is aware this type of practice is happening. It's just another shake my head moment. But the fact that now this is being reported, and I guess some people are wondering, hey, what the heck? Come on, man. This is common practice. They've been doing this for some time. It's going to happen more and more and more in the future. Heck, we talked about it earlier in the show that they can't even say anything about bank runs. come on. You know, like it's just another story like that. But
if the system and the facts and stuff like are so fragile, okay, that a couple of tweets can upend the order of things, then the system is not worth saving. Period. That's it. If a couple of like Elon memes can turn over the order, then you got to get rid of the order. The order is the problem. It's not the tweets. Okay. The same way that if a gust of wind comes and blows your house down, the house is the problem, Len. It's not the wind. Okay. We're not going around blaming the wind for this kind of stuff. I of course appreciate, okay, that during a time like COVID, there are moments where there will be a temptation by governments to try and narrow the focus of a population. When, for example, at the beginning of COVID, you don't know how dangerous the virus is. And so you cannot afford to have people going, you should ignore the lockdown order during week one, okay? You should ignore the lockdown order, keep going about your day-to-day life, definitely go to the mall, have a huge party, blah, 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 okay? The whole thing is a farce, whatever. During week one, there's some line there somewhere that it's hard to toe. I appreciate that. And so I can see the temptation. But Len, after 2 years,
these context guys is king.
That's, you know, really, come on. Like yeah. the facts started to leak out. There's scientific data, journal articles about this stuff, and prominent professionals that were deplatformed, plain and simple, right? And we were all worse off for it. We are all worse off for it. And I'm not one of these people who wants, Nuremberg 2 or whatever everyone's talking about, but I would like to see some accountability and some reflection, public, of course, reflection from the powers that be about the last 3 years. And let's try not to let it happen again. The tools are becoming more complex, not less complex. And so getting a hold of these things in a way that makes sense for everybody is important going forward.
Well, what else can they do? They crippled the banking system, and that's the last domino to fall. Crazy. So, I mean, the next time
I'm watching as we talk here, the price of Bitcoin on the two clocks on the screen, because I have a feeling that we're either going to head back down to 25 or up to 35. Anyway, this is not a Bitcoin show, but thank you for stopping in to Access of Easy, number 290. If you want more of us, come check out the Canadian Bitcoiners. And if you don't, well, too bad. We'll see you here same time next week. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.